Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Sounds like somebody's drinking a tasty beverage. Hey, fellas.
I'm sorry, it's my tea. Okay. Sorry, having a little froggy in my throat.
How
sorry.
That's okay. How's everybody
throw me
doing
under
today?
The bus. Hey,
this is where we play. Can we make the liquid come out of Michelle's nose? That's my favorite game.
I'll work on it. I'll work on it.
All right. Let's get things started by expanding on what we heard earlier in the show. The fight in Wisconsin over state workers union bargaining. Now, all of Wisconsin's Democratic state senators are still somewhere in Illinois trying to hold off on a final vote on the Republican governor's budget repair bill. That bill includes language critics say will bust the public employees' unions, Michelle.
You know, this story has just taken on so many dimensions, and clearly he did not mean this part of it to be public, but Governor Walker, a Republican, told a blogger and a journalist who was posing as the billionaire donor David Koch, who's become known, along with his brother, for funding, you know, conservative causes of various stripes, that this is a big moment in time, not just for his state, but for others, especially those with Republican governors like John Kasich in Ohio and Rick Snyder in Michigan. This is a little bit from that prank call. He didn't know it was a prank, from the website Buffalo Beast.
That's all they want to talk about is, what are you doing to help the governor in Wisconsin? You know, the next question, I talk to Kasich every day. You know, John's got to stand firm in Ohio. I think we can do the same thing with Rick Scott in Florida. I think Snyder, if he got a little more support, probably could do that in Michigan. I mean, you start going down the list, you know, a lot of us, there's a lot of us new governors who got elected to do something big.
You're the first domino.
Yep. This is our moment.
Don't!
I'm not sure why that's a big deal. I mean,
it's interesting. Go ahead, Ruben.
Well, that clip, Ruben, I mean, it's a guy talking. The statement from Walker's office is that this is, you know, nothing he wouldn't have said publicly or hasn't already said publicly or whatever. But the main thing that troubles me is that the numbers just don't add up in terms of public pension unions, public pensions in this country, public employee pensions in this country. And I say that, remember, I live in San Diego, the most insolvent city in the most insolvent state in the country. And the reason is we have retired police officers and firemen. Speaking to you as the son of a cop, nothing but love here. We have retired cops who make more in retirement than they did when they were working. We have a retired librarian who was the head librarian in San Diego who made $160,000 when she was working. She makes $227,000 now that she's retired. You can't sustain that under normal circumstances. And in Wisconsin, it's all part of this whole big story. You also have to deal with the fact that demographically you have, say with me, 70 million baby boomers who are about to retire. This thing is not, this doesn't pencil out. We don't have the money. And Walker can be taped talking to this person or that person or whatever, but it's not a joke. We don't have the money to pay the bills necessary to fulfill all the obligations under these public employee pensions. And the Democrats don't get that because they're in the back pocket of the labor unions that secured the pensions. You got to keep it real. We don't have the money.
Well, what about Arsalan? I don't know.
Yeah, Ruben, we do need to keep it real. You know, this is also a political football that's being used by Governor Scott Walker. Let's not forget that there's two prongs to this whole debate. First is the request for unions to pay more money out of pocket for benefits, which they've already conceded to. Now, the second part where Walker is trying...
Well, because remember, the auto workers unions have agreed, they voted on packages
of
give back.
The second part, the political football part of it, is him trying to eliminate the collective bargaining power of these unions afterwards. So it's basically, you've already agreed to give more money out of pocket, and now we're seeing in the future, we're trying to essentially union bust you, you know, to the point where, you know, Shepard Smith and your buddy Juan Williams on Fox News even said that...
Yeah, he is my buddy.
I know. to actually say that this is just about the deficit is, quote, duck feathers. I mean, this is malarkey in the sense that... You know, he's using a political football here. You know, the top 10 donors in America.
You're not getting this, Arsalan. You're not getting this. It's very simple. If you are on the liberal side of the fence, you have to respect what FDR said in the 30s about the fact that collective bargaining cannot be used with public employees. And I'll explain why. When you work for a private company, and I support collective bargaining with private companies, but when you're dealing with a private company, The one thing that has to happen is if you push too hard on that private company will go bankrupt and everybody loses. Public cities and states don't go bankrupt that easily. So collective bargaining is not the problem. It's collective bargaining with public employees. That's the problem.
Well, we already had that conversation earlier in the program, so I didn't want to plow that ground again. One of the things I was curious about, your guys' perspective on this, Jimmy, I'm curious what you think about this too, is this whole idea of the Democrats kind of decamping to another state, because what they're saying is that because Republicans control both houses of the legislature right. and the governor's office, and they know that they're going to lose on the vote. And they're saying that this is the only way they can get the governor to at least hear what they have to say. And I'm just curious about what you all think about that.
To deny quorum.
To deny them a quorum. That's the only reason that works on the Senate. So I'm just wondering what people think about that.
I think it's cowardly, but I think it's brilliant. I think it's both.
I think it's been done before. It's not. I don't fault the Democrats for this at all. I don't fault the Democrats for this. This is the device they use. And then the Republicans try to chase them around with the state troopers. But I saw this firsthand in Texas when I was working for the Dallas Morning News. It was the Texas Democrats who fled to New Mexico and to Oklahoma to avoid a quorum. So it's been done before. I supported the Democrats when they fled before. I have to support the Democrats now. It's a perfectly legitimate device. And in return, the state says, well, we're not going to pay you for those days. Again, that's not the problem. That's a sideshow. That's not the issue. The issue is, where's the money? This stuff doesn't pencil out. How do we pay for it?
Well, the only question I have, though, is if you negotiate your contract in good faith with anybody, and then the circumstances change, why don't you then renegotiate it? Why is that different for people who are bargaining as a group as opposed to bargaining as individuals? That's the question I have. A contract, it's a contract.
Right.
So you're basically saying instead of renegotiating the terms, they're saying, no, I'm going to deprive you of the ability to negotiate. And that's
but
the question
that
I have.
But unions won't do that, Michelle.
They've already done that. What are you talking about? They've already done that.
Unions will not renegotiate these deals. For instance, in San Diego and other cities, the city has gone to court to try to change the law, basically to say, can we invalidate these old contracts? We don't have the money for this, and issue new contracts. And the judges have typically said, no, a deal's a deal. So we're back to square one again. And the big difference is, again, when you're working at a private company, the company can go broke, but they're banking on the fact that the state of Wisconsin can't go broke. They're just going to pass the debt on to future generations, including the young men on this program.
Paolo, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think the irony in all of this—
young man on this program.
You know, well, I think the irony is that, you know, this is one of the best things that's happened to the union movement in quite a long time. I mean, I can't remember, I mean, well, due to my age partly, but maybe also for historical reasons, the last time such a great swath of the population cared about labor and unions. I guess the MLB lockout might have been the last time people cared about labor. And it's really interesting because you have this demographic infusion of youth. I mean, now it's sort of a progressive, obviously Democrat versus Republican thing. But honestly, I mean, this is bringing attention to the union movement at large, private and public, in a way that I don't think people had anticipated. I wonder about the 2012 election, obviously. You know, I think these people are so mobilized and so united over this that, you know, I don't even know how long Scott Walker's going to be around.
Well, you know, speaking of another high-profile labor dispute, then this might be a good time to talk about the NFL. And if you just joined us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop. And what this whole issue around former Chicago Bears star Dave Duerson, mm-hmm. who, you know, sadly took his own life, and he sent text messages to his family before his death asking them to have his brain analyzed for something called CTE, which has been found in other football players who suffered multiple concussions and led to depression. And this is an interview with Duerson's ex-wife, Alicia. Here's what she had to say.
He told me he loved me very much, and he was truly sorry, and that he loved the kids. He thinks there was something wrong with his brain on the left side. And for me to please get it to the NFL.
Pablo, what about this?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously it's tragic, but this is especially not the circumstance that the NFL wanted to hear about when they heard about the passing of Dave Duerson. I mean, it just, you know, not to be crude about it, but it's another body on the pile. It's another story that the NFL needs to recognize. And the larger point of this for me is, you know, we're looking at the future of America's popular sport, most popular sport by far. It's not even close. And the way we've thought about football for so long is as one of the big three with baseball and basketball. What's becoming clear to me and to a lot of people, and especially scientists who've been saying this for quite a while, is that it's not a baseball or a basketball. What it is, it's closer to boxing. And we've seen what happened with boxing is an extreme decline once people realized how dangerous it was, an extreme socioeconomic and racial divergence once parents realized how dangerous boxing was.
And but you look but at the
football,
irony
you
is,
wonder about it.
But the irony, though, is that this is coming. These revelations are coming forward when the sport has at a height of popularity.
Exactly.
I mean, the last Super Bowl and a Super Bowl before that set records for viewership, for television viewership.
Oh, it's mind-blowing. And I can tell you at SI, I mean, there's no question what readers want. They want football, and they want more football, and then they want football. I mean, it's not even close.
Do they want head injuries? I mean, I think this. When you watch a football game, the reason you tune in is to see the competition, the strategies, the plays, who outdoes what. This idea somehow that we're old school, that we want to see people butting heads and, you know, just it's not a hockey game. I don't go there for the fights. It's not a hockey game. And I think that what's really scary about this, frankly, is the fact, and you hit on it, you have little kids playing in Pop Warner and junior varsity and high school football and growing up in this culture without a serious discussion in this country about concussions and about, you know, how much padding is in the helmet and head injuries and all this stuff. And I think it's something that people have talked about and I've read about for some time. But it is sort of to football what the steroid controversy is to baseball. In terms of this ugly little secret nobody wants to talk about, but it's something that we're going to have to deal with. Those of us who love football and love watching football, we have to start thinking seriously about what's happening to people under the helmet.
Before we move on to the one more thing you wanted to talk about, Arsenal, I just wanted to ask you, because you're also another sick football fan.
I grew up in Chicago, and I watched Dave Duerson, you know, playing for the 85 Bears, one of the greatest teams in modern NFL history with, you know, Walter Sweetness Payton, Jim McMahon, Willie Gulp, The Fridge, and Mike Singletary. And, you know, it was... you know, it was really tragic to hear about it, but, you know, I think that he left a very positive legacy on the field, and hopefully, you know, his tragic passing will offer, you know, some much-needed advancement in our collective conversation about the future of the NFL.
Does it change the way you think about the sport?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, Pablo and I have talked about the head injury thing in the past, you know, with the helmet-to-helmet stuff, you know, the new Toyota commercials that have come out. I mean, I think we're entering a new phase in our, you know, societal discourse about professional sports.
Jimmy, what about you? I know that you're not a huge fan, but what do you think? Does it change the way you think about the sport?
Absolutely, because my son is now getting into sports. My youngest son, he's really starting to get into certain kinds of sports, and he wants to do what his dad does. His dad used to box and do martial arts, so he wants to get interested in Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu. And I'm less concerned about his head injuries there than I would be
exactly.
If he wanted to play football. But if he does want to play football, I mean, I think I would dissuade him from that more than I would dissuade him from, you know, learning how to do a decent arm bar in jiu-jitsu.
Okay. Before we let you go, big trade news, Pablo. Big trade news in the NBA this week. You have lots of trades. Oh. Pablo, break it down.
Well, what I can tell you is just generally, obviously, Carmelo going to the Knicks, joining Amari Stoudemire. What we're seeing is the big markets taking control of the NBA. We've seen it in baseball, the gap between rich and poor. Now we're seeing the geographic advantage take advantage of what they've got. I mean, big players now, it's so funny to think of sports when free agency didn't exist. Now stars are saying, we have control over our own destiny. We want to choose where we want to go. And they're going to the biggest, richest cities. And so you're going to see these big gangs rising up out of New York, Chicago, Boston, Miami.
What are you talking about,
LA?
Gangs? Who are you calling a gang?
Oh, sorry.
What's up with that?
Well, by that I mean we're actually getting identities with these cities. I mean, these guys are joining up together. They're beating up on everybody else, and they're taking control of the NBA. I think this is the first step.
Final quick thought.
Yeah, I got two major trades. My Boston Celtics gave up our starting center Kendrick Perkins and Nate Robinson to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Jeff Green and Nenad Krstić. Danny Ainge, if you're listening, come on, man. And my heart,
if you're out there,
my heart goes out to Baron Davis. You know, last week, Boom Dizzle was lobbing alley oops from a key at a Blake Griffin, and now he's crying in Cleveland. So poor Boom Dizzle.
Well, we're not trading any of you.
Not yet.
I hope
until I join a gang.
Jimmy Israel is author of the book The Denzel Principle. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. He was with us from San Diego. Pablo Torre, reporter for Sports Illustrated, with us from New York. Arsalan Iftikhar, civil rights attorney and founder of TheMuslimGuide.com. He was with us in Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.